Golf Smarter number 97 for October 23, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
The perfect 30-minute practice, the game before the game with Lynn Marriott.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thank you for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will answer questions about purchasing clubs for your beginners, or more specifically, your wife, cracking the face of your driver, and will announce the winner of our drawing for a Frankly Frog putter. Also, stick around after Kenny, because I have a favor to ask. Our guest today is Lynn Marriott, who, along with Pia Nilsson, co-founded Vision 54, which has developed award-winning integrated golf programs, and in 2005 was Golf Magazine's number one golf school in the U.S. Together, Lynn and Pia have coached some of the biggest names in golf, including Annika Sorenstam. Their first book was Every Shot Must Have a Purpose. This book is called The Game Before the Game, The Perfect 30-Minute Practice. Luckily, we've arranged to have Lynn's partner Pia in a couple episodes from now so that we can have an in-depth interview with each of them. Welcome, Lynn.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
I'm perfect. How are you?
I like perfect. How do you get there?
Well, you wake up every day with an intention and a purpose.
And is that how you got to write books?
No, actually, I'm a golf professional and played the game since I was 11. And writing a couple of golf books was never really in the vision early on. It was more just about my own playing and then helping others learn and enjoy and perform at the game. And then when I started the company with Pia Nilsson, our company Vision 54, people kept saying, you guys need to put your ideas in a book form. So the book thing came way later.
So now the book that you just released is called The Game Before the Game, The Perfect 30-Minute Practice, which I think there's a demand for this kind of content.
Well, actually, yeah. P and I have had a vision when we started the company. Our company is called Vision 54. But part of that vision was to change the way people practice. And that included the tour players, professional players that we coached, down to amateur players, and then for, of course, new golfers learning the game, that they learn, you know, that practice didn't need to be about beating balls, that it needed to be about something that was productive that actually transferred out to the golf course. And that transfer is a big deal for us because a lot of people spend time, money, and energy on practicing, and they get better at practicing, but they don't necessarily get better at playing golf.
Yeah, and you know, I received an email recently from a listener who was asking about, look, my time, and I'm sure he speaks for many people, who says, my time is limited. Golf takes a lot of time. Where are things going to be more efficient for me? Practicing or playing golf? How's the best way to make that work?
Well, I mean, the first thing is that when you look at this, what we call the game before the game, is you look at what's the big intention of why you practice. And for most people, we think that's to play better golf on the golf course. And, you know, fortunately, there's been some research done now on practice habits and practice habits in different sports, and then specifically golf. And when they look at golfers' practice habits, or what they do in practice, they say we have the worst habits of any sport. And what they mean by that, what the research concludes, is that what people do does not actually transfer to, again, better play on the golf course or lower scores on the golf course, and especially like in competition, which is what most people do. So that's interesting. I mean, the research backs it up, is that,
sure,
you know, we're not doing this in a smart and productive way. So to answer your question, I guess, more specifically, is that if we want to get better at golf, we need to practice golf. And that's like the big intention that we try to get through. in the book, and then we break it down into that the reality of people's golf experiences is that there's different elements. There's the physical element, the technical element, the mental element, the emotional element, the social element, and then what we call like the spirit of the game. It's kind of the juice that keeps everything going. And when you look at all those elements, then you need to practice within each of those elements to that, again, to that bigger intention that it transfers to the golf course.
Oh, boy, you said about eight things there that I wanted to, like, I just want to go, stop, I want to ask you about that.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. let's back up a little bit and talk about what if we don't practice golf, what is it that we're doing out on the driving range?
Well, if you look at most driving ranges, and P and I have been fortunate to travel around the world, and this is true whether you're in Japan or Taiwan or Europe, and you know, any country in Europe, is that what people are doing out there is they're doing like block practice. They're hitting a bunch of seven irons to the same target. So what they're getting good at...
Guilty.
What's that?
Guilty.
Yeah, I mean, so you, what do you get good at?
Nothing.
Well, no, I mean, actually you get really good at hitting repetitive seven irons to the same target.
Okay.
I mean, and one of the you know, phrases, or if you want to call it sound bites, that we use to have people really understand this is what you practice, you get good at. So what most people are doing out there are just doing a lot of repetitive block practice that doesn't really have context to the game. Because the game, every shot is a new shot. And the game, in its dimensions, it's variable. I mean, the target's always changing, you're always changing, the conditions are always changing. So if you're going to actually practice for transfer, you need to practice the game as it is, what we call simulating golf.
And let's have some examples, please, of what specifically you want us to do or what we're doing wrong.
Yeah, I mean very specifically and pretty easily is that simulating golf just means that you're going to have a different club every ball to a different target, and you're going to go through your routine, and you're going to try to create as much of the mental and emotional conditions that also are in golf. So I often say that, I mean, of course, there's the different club to a different target, full routine, what we say full pre-shot routine and full post-shot routine. And then if you're bugged, let's say, by somebody rattling their change or talking in your backswing, then invite them to your practice. Because that's what's going to happen on the golf course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Or I'll give you another example is that, I mean, when you really look at it, if you were just to hit, let's say, 10 balls within 20 minutes and you take a break between those shots and then you just calculate out of those 10 shots in 20 minutes, how many did you actually hit with the purpose or intention that you had? And that's more like real golf, because real golf, there's breaks between shots.
Have you found that when people do this block practicing, like you're explaining, that, again, guilty, it's like, okay, I'll hit my seven iron, and I'll hit it four or five times, and then I'll hit it, and then I'll hit one and say, got it. Okay, that was the shot, and then I put away the seven iron.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I don't need to practice that anymore. I got the shot that I was looking for.
Right. Well, the interesting thing with that, I mean, and, you know, I've been guilty of this also, is that you get this false sense of confidence. You go, I've got it. Oh, I've
right.
got that. But what you've got is a seven iron in that context.
Right.
So that context isn't going to transfer as efficiently to the golf course when you only have one seven iron and it's maybe come after a driver and you've had time between shots and all those things. I mean, it doesn't have context. So that feeling of confidence then becomes contextually bound to a pile of balls with repetitive swings of the same club to the same target. And, you know, the other funny thing is people will start getting a really good rhythm going with their pile of balls. So they're like, oh, yeah, I got the tempo. But that tempo, again, is contextually bound to a pile of balls that you're, like, scraping over, what we call scrape and hit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Scrape and hit meaning scrape the ball over in front of you, hit it, scrape the ball over in front of you, hit it?
Yeah, got it.
So then does it make more sense to practice with a bucket of balls, or just have a round of golf that is a practice round, that you're not keeping score, that you're not competing with anybody except with yourself, of course, or even don't even compete with yourself, but working on things? Is that?
Oh, I mean, you know, absolutely the best place to practice golf is where it's played, and that's, you know, of course, the golf course. You know, we often say, like, if you go to practice swimming, where do you practice it? In the swimming pool.
In a driving range.
Yeah, you got it. So, yeah, of course, the golf course would be, you know, the best place to practice golf in its context, as we just said. And then, like you alluded to, is that you go out with more of it being a learning mindset than a proving mindset. I mean, so many times people go out to play golf and they're going to prove something, instead of it going out and it literally being a practice round of golf or a learning round of golf. And then you go out with, you know, if we call it a learning round, you go out with specific focuses or intentions or purposes that you want to accomplish or learn during that round, and that's what you focus on. But you're out there actually on the golf course doing it.
So then there's got to be a huge difference between, say, warming up for your round on the driving range versus a practice on the driving range.
Yes. So we, you know, in our book, The Game Before the Game, we break down practice for people just to have a way to compartmentalize this into three areas, what we call warm-up practice, maintenance practice, and preparation or performance practice. So warm-up is just that. It's warming up. It's warming up the mind, the body, the swing. And what we like to say, that that activity of warm-up has the intention of getting warmed up, and most of all, getting competent. And most people, when they go to warm up, you know, they go, oh, wow, I'm a little stiff. You know, they might do a few stretches, you know, that kind of thing. But then they get the pile of balls or the bucket of balls or the pyramid of balls, and they start whacking away. And then maybe, ooh, they get a little slice or a little fade, and they call, they start what we call search and scan. And they're not warming up anymore. They're starting to search and scan to fix the problem. And, you know, they're like, oh, man, I'm going to fade it today. Oh, you know, or I'm going to hook it. Or, you know, gosh, I'm topping it. I wonder why I'm doing that. And they start searching for technical or mechanical things to do, which then just leads them off the big intention of just getting warmed up and feeling confident. So what's interesting is that, you know, what we try to tell people with warm-up is that you want to come up with your best way of warming up. And for each person, that's going to be a little bit different. And then you need to have what we call, like, emergency warm-up for those days that you get stuck in the traffic, or, you know, you're late from the office, or, you know, something happens and you only have just a few minutes to warm up. What are you going to do with that? But that's a big distinction. I mean, in fact, we just had a tour player here this weekend that spent 2 days, you know, with us, and we were coaching her, and we made a big distinction about warm-up and maintenance practice, or performance or preparation practice. And she had, you know, here she's been out on tour, she's won tournaments, she's never really considered it that way, because even on tour, you know, you're going to see people that are still doing that kind of panic search and scan warm-up practice. Did I talk too long there?
No, never.
Okay.
More you talk, the better we all are. I want to talk about the panic warm-up for a second, because I'm sure we've all experienced it. Like you said, you get stuck in traffic, or you had to walk the dog or something, and you couldn't get there on time. And I just recently had one of those. Can you give us a great, or actually the most efficient panic warm-up drill?
Yeah, I mean, for some, it really should be that they don't hit any golf balls at all.
Really?
Oh, my God, no, because they're so stressed. They've already got themselves in a stress state. You know, starting to hit balls is just going to compound that stress. So it might be better they do a few stretches, do some breathing, what we call coherence breathing or heart breathing.
We had Dr. Bruce Wilson on talking about heart breathing.
Oh, good. Yeah, I know Bruce really well from HeartMath.
Yeah.
P and I, we've been helping HeartMath actually get into golf. We were the first golf professionals to ever attend their programs back in actually 10 years ago, back in 1997.
Well, so, you know, there's so many different people out there that have their own version of how to improve your golf game. You just never know which ones are legitimate or not, especially when you're approaching it like myself as just someone who likes to play golf. And so I see somebody's got a website. Okay, I'm interested. You know, someone makes a recommendation. Okay, I'll talk to them. So actually you're confirming that there's validity to that.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, the thing is now we're getting a bit off frame, or you know.
That's okay. We can come back.
From what we were just talking about,
yeah,
but
I'm
I will just say with the heart breathing and why it's really good, if you're in a panic, you know, warm up situation, is that you want to get yourself again confident or at least calm, and I mean ultimately it would be that you're confident, and the heart breathing, if you really engage it. You know, what you're doing is you're stopping the cortisol from releasing into the system, and you're increasing the chances of DHEA getting secreted into the system. And you're getting yourself not just in a mindset, but actually a physiological state that you're going to be better off with on the first tee in a few minutes than just trying to hit a bunch of balls. And, I mean, that's all been absolutely scientifically proven. And we look a lot at that. In fact, I'll just say this, that in our book, again, The Game Before the Game, one of the chapters is about how to create a good play box. And the play box is a very specific performance state. And again, like being coherent and having a coherent heart rhythm is just a part of that good performance state. It's not everything. You can't say like heart math and what heart math is doing is everything in golf, but it's just one area that you start to understand when we want to get in a good performance state, that if we learn some tools that we've got a better chance of getting there.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go back now to the panic warm-up. Thank you for that confirmation that stuff was legit. But on the panic warm-up, I would think, and again for myself, that when I'm in that state, panicking meaning I just pulled up to the first tee because I just pulled up to the golf course,
right.
You know, and I'm running over to the tee box to get ready to go, that the hardest part is slowing down to get into a playing state.
Right, exactly. So that, like, what we would recommend several things. Like I said, the heart breathing, maybe some stretches, what we call Tai Chi swings or very slow swings. And where you're very present, you know, it's going to maybe take you a couple of minutes to make one golf swing. And it's just, again, the main thing here, again, is to get present, to feel like, okay, now I'm here at the golf course. I'm no longer walking the dog, or I'm no longer back in that traffic jam. I'm right here. I'm getting ready to go play. You know, and that's the whole thing. You want to get present. You want to get calm, or at least calm down if you've been stressed up, and confident. So then it might be that you go over, if you're close enough to the putting green, or the first tee's close enough to the putting green, that you go over and just hit a couple of short putts. You see the ball go in the hole. You feel the ball go in the hole. You feel a good stroke, and you know, that whole thing. You get your senses warmed up to go play, and that the ball's going to go in the hole.
Yeah, I can see just stepping over the hole on the practice putting green, leave yourself a 12-inch putt, close your eyes just so you can hear the sound of it going in, right?
Yeah. Exactly. But I'll just tell you, there's a funny story with this, and Amy Elcott probably won't remember it. But
she will if she listens to this.
Yeah, she will if she does listen to this. But this is several years ago, actually probably 12 years ago. She was playing a tournament in Massachusetts, an LPGA event, and she was leading after the third round. So obviously she was in the last group on Sunday, and I was helping a friend who was also coaching her. And so I was there to just watch her warm up. And so she was warming up. She started shanking it. I mean, literally shanking it. So, and she even took out like a lofted fairway wood, probably like a 7-wood, and it was going to the right.
Ouch.
So what would most amateurs do? Yeah, they'd start to panic.
Absolutely.
But the coolest thing about her, I'll never forget it. She like did not get flustered. She just kind of looked around, you know, collected herself. You know, put the clubs back in the bag. She said, "Hey, Lynn, how you doing? Going to be a great day." I'm like, "Go get them, Amy." She walked to the first tee, you know, just teed off, drive right in the middle, won the tournament. And that, to me, is like incredible composure. I mean, that's just an example because, I mean, how many times have you gone and you've had a warm-up session and you've hit the ball great? Right, and you go, "Oh my God, this is going to be a super duper day."
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and you get out on the course. It didn't show up.
Yeah.
you know, or just the opposite. You go and warm up and you hit the ball skanky and you go, oh, God, this is going to be a horrible day. And you get out and voila, your best game shows up. So we often say warm up in no way indicates how you're going to go play. So don't get caught up in that.
Oh, yeah. I've never been able to see a correlation between the two.
Yeah, there just isn't one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really deciding what your intention for warm up is and then doing that.
As soon as you said Tai Chi warm up or swing, I got up on my feet. Tell me, when I'm on my feet, explain this to me. I love the idea of what that sounds like, but you got to tell me what you're talking about.
Well, actually, we were introduced to through Fred Shoemaker.
And sure, Fred's been on the show.
Yeah, and Fred's a good friend of ours, and I think we've taken it to a different level. We do it in lots of different ways, but it's simply said, it's a Tai Chi paced golf swing. And you don't do it with a golf ball, but you just make a golf swing as slow as you possibly can go. Mm. We say with two rules. One, that you stay present. So it's actually training for your mental state also, because your mind will tend to wander when you're going that slow.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah. And then number two, the other rule is that you breathe. Because people, as they start going that slow with something that's usually done, you know, within a couple of seconds, start to hold their breath and get really tight.
Yep.
And then as they breathe, they become more aware of where there are tension spots in the swing.
Hmm.
So what we often say, like you'll see it, as they're doing the Tai Chi movement and they're going slow, all of a sudden maybe the club will involuntarily start to jerk or go fast. And you're like, what's going on there? It could be a tension spot in the body. You know, maybe your hands grabbed it or your shoulder got tight or something. Or it could just be a conceptual blind spot that you have about the golf swing. But what we found is that just with the Tai Chi swing, people just get more aware, they get more present, and that's, again, what you want. That kind of, again, is more of a state of being warmed up to go play.
Yeah. Oh, it's a phenomenal thing because I'm trying to do it here, and the first thing I noticed, I was holding my breath.
Yeah.
Then I started feeling myself to sway, and it's like, oh, so, and boy, right now, Lynn, just imagine for yourself that there's somebody on a commuter train doing this.
Yay!
And they're doing, and go as slow as you can and really try to stay present, especially with all those people around you. But, I mean, just stand there and do it, and you really do feel how mistakes can get magnified.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's phenomenal.
The one thing that we found is that if people are going to make, I'm going to say now, changes to their golf swing, the first thing they need to do is be aware of it. And this just, totally heightens people's awareness. And, sometimes when people first start it, they can't even go that slow.
Sure.
And then, what's been interesting for us, and we have all the latest, greatest, fancy video equipment and all that, and of course we can look at it and draw lines, but when people become more aware themselves and having to be shown through a two-dimensional video screen, the changes are more efficient. And then for us, what we see when as a coach and we're standing there watching people do Tai Chi swings, we see if there's some physical limitations or we see if there's like a conceptual blind spot. This is, again, a funny story, but a couple of years ago we did some training with the Canadian PGA with one of the provinces up there, and we had a room full of about 100 Canadian PGA pros. And then we had them all doing Tai Chi swings. It was pretty cool. In the middle of winter in Manitoba. And this one Canadian pro was so cute. He got just past impact, and, the club hadn't started to turn over. The face was still going straight away. And he was kind of holding on. And he goes, Lynn, I knew that I've always tended to hold on to the club and block it, but now it's painfully obvious. And that's the whole point, is that, it becomes very obvious what's going on there, either for the student themselves or player themselves or for the coach.
Now, it's clearly a ball is not necessary when you're doing your Tai Chi swing, but is a club necessary? Does that really make a difference of having a club in your hand when you do this?
Yeah, our preference would be that you do it with a club. And then we sometimes have little learning clubs. It's just a regular golf club cut down, to a couple feet in length. And then you can do it with that. But, preferably you'd want to do it with a full-size club. And then also notice, you know, how does your Tai Chi swing change from, let's say, a wedge to a driver? Now, this is interesting. We worked with a young lady over in Japan, and she plays the JLPGA. And 2 years ago, she came back, and she didn't like her putting stats, and she wanted to improve on them. And so her name's Yuko. And Yuko started just to do a Tai Chi putting stroke. And, I mean, you know, she's been getting coaching from us for a couple of years. And, I mean, you imagine, I mean, a Tai Chi putting stroke. The putting stroke is a motor skill or a motor program isn't that difficult. But she just did it to be more aware of where she gets tense. And anyway, she, you know, after she'd been with us for a while and she did this, she went back to Japan. And her putting stats, she went from, like, 46th in putting to, like top 10.
Wow.
And I know it sounds, it's so blessedly simple, but it can be profound in just awareness.
And then absolutely.
Again, and then efficiency of changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, we just find it to be something that, you know, players like to do in warm-up. And, you know, we've been coaching Suzanne Pedersen since November. She came to our program, our golf program. She just came with other amateurs and so forth. And for Suzanne, the Tai Chi swing's been incredibly resourceful and valuable. And she often does it, well, she just did a couple weeks ago at the Solheim Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's just something she does in warm-up to just get present and just feel how she wants her swing to be.
It's very difficult for me to stay in the present in normal life. I could see, like, just as I said, I was on my feet and trying it. I never even got past through a quarter way up my swing, you know, because I'm sitting here trying to have a conversation with you too, so it's really a distracting thing. But I really want to see if I can do it. All the way through a full swing as slowly as I possibly can.
Yeah. And I want to say this, like, you know, to the listeners out there that are not professionals or low handicappers, if they're...
You're talking to all of us.
Okay, so if you're learning, like, you're just learning the golf swing, again, this is something that just increases the awareness and we think increases the learning curve greatly. And then it would be great to have a coach or, you know, golf professional or teacher help you become more aware of where those blind spots are or where the club needs to be. And we often say it doesn't need to be a lot of explicit, you know, angles and elbows instruction, just helping a player just feel where the club needs to be. Maybe then you could bring in a mirror, or we use virtual reality glasses where they can actually see their swing while they're doing it in real time. They're just normal, like, glasses that you use on a video iPod, and you connect them to your video camera, so you see your swing while you're doing it in Tai Chi motion. And again, like I said, for an amateur golfer, a newer golfer, it's like, wow, it's there it is. And, yeah, so, and we don't think that you need a lot of explicit angles and elbows instruction with that.
No. No, if you that's some way you can see it yourself, because I've always had the issue with, I don't know if I'm making a mistake or not, but magnifying it in that way
right. Can
really help.
Yeah.
Really help. Explain to me Vision 54.
Well, Vision 54 started, actually, Pia can tell you more about that when you talk to Pia Nielsen, but she started it back in Sweden when she was head coach of the Swedish national teams. And she used it as really a paradigm breaker over there to help them change some of their beliefs about what they could achieve in golf. And, you know, Annika still has a 54 head cover on her golf bag. So Pia had that going on in Sweden, and then when she came over here to the U.S. and we started our company, we really decided to call it Vision 54 because it's, I mean, in numbers, it's 18 under par. It's the belief that you can actually birdie every hole on the golf course or even lower. You could throw a few eagles in there. So it's 54 or lower. But more importantly for us, Vision 54 is it's a metaphor for believing in your potential. And what we call bringing the possibilities to life and bringing the possibilities in your game to life. So that's what it's really about. So, you know, again, if you're a new golfer or you're a professional golfer, you can have your own Vision 54. And it's deciding what is it for you? What do you want out of the game and what do you believe is possible for yourself?
Are there vast differences for the amateur, as when I speak, between men's golf and women's golf as far as what skills they need to work on and what mistakes they make?
Well, I actually, you're talking to the person who thinks that there's been too much gender. I mean, for years, you know, you had these women's clubs and men's clubs and women's golf balls and men's golf balls. And, you know, now we all know that it has to do with swing speeds and launch angles, and it doesn't have to be, a gender doesn't need to be put on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but the one area that's been interesting when you look at men's and women's golf games is, you know, the physical part. And you start to really look at how we're built differently. And we're very involved with Titleist Performance Institute, and we're on their advisory board. And when you start to really look at even some of the data that they're collecting about strength and flexibility and just how different bodies move, you're seeing a big difference. So, yeah, I mean, you know, women tend to be more flexible in the hips than men do, and that's what, you know, most of the research is showing when you're looking at their golf swings and you're doing some of the 3D analysis.
Is that an advantage?
It could be, but, you know, if you have a lot of flexibility without stability, no.
Ah, good point.
You know, yeah. So there's, you know, there's some other issues with that. I mean, Kai Fuser, who's Annika's trainer, has said in all the training he's done with her and other players that where he finds women a lot weaker than the men that he works with is in the lat area. And, you know, that's why he got Annika doing pull-ups. So, I mean, that's why you'll see a new, you know, a woman who hasn't done a lot of athletic things and she's new to golf, she'll tend to lift the club. And it's not because she doesn't understand that the club needs to go, you know, more rounder. It's just that she isn't built strong enough to do that. And she just tends to lift the club up. And there may be some other physical issues that go with that. So it's really not that the woman doesn't understand it. It's that she physically doesn't have the structure to do it yet.
But they can compete with us.
Yes, they can.
And make us look bad as easily as they want to.
Especially
in the emotional part of the game.
What's that?
Especially in the emotional part of the
why
game.
Why do you say that?
Oh, a woman can shut a man down just like that, emotionally. No problem.
You want to give us an example of
No, because okay. My wife might listen to this, and okay. I'd be in really big trouble.
Does she play golf?
She's starting to.
Okay.
She's starting to, and per Joe Parent's instructions, we don't count her score, we count her good shots.
Yes, excellent. Yeah.
So, and she's, you know, I keep telling her, hey, you hit it straight. It doesn't have to get in the air every time.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's her Vision 54 right now.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. That's a good call. So, again, the book is called The Game Before the Game, The Perfect 30-Minute Practice. It's one of my favorite types of golf books because it's not a huge book. It's a quick read. It's got tips and drills in it at the end of every chapter. I really enjoyed it, and I especially enjoyed speaking to you about it, Lynn. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you, Fred. It's been a pleasure, and I'll look forward to doing it with you another time.
Awesome. You're on.
Okay.
And it's time to ask Kenny. Now, if you have a question about specific golf gear or you're baffled about what to look for when you're shopping for golf stuff, it's time to ask Kenny. Kenny Nicholson, our technical specialist at EdwinWattsGolf.com, is here to help. And if we use your question on the show, you're going to receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. Now, to submit your question, please go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com. Golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Kenny, we have a lot to do today. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to rock and roll.
Do it. All right. First,
you're not in any danger of those fires out there, are you?
No, thank you for asking. I'm in the northern part of California, and that is just ripping up Southern California.
Pray for those people out there. Woo.
Yeah, we really do. And that was a moment of silence for those. And now, the first question comes from Gert Bielen, who's writing to us from Belgium. And I'm going to try this here. He's from Vertrek, Belgium, which is a small town just close to Leuven. You know that, right?
Yeah, I was born in Wiesbaden. So.
So he says, my problem is I bought a KZG Gemini driver in February of 2004, and since then had to replace the head on a yearly basis due to cracks in the middle of the head. At the end of 2007, the same story all over again on driver head number 4. Actually, I gave up on them and am looking for a new driver. Now, with companies stretching the limits and faces of drivers, isn't this happening more and more often with the faces becoming thinner? And is there a way you can tell the certain driver isn't good enough for a certain swing speed, and Garrett's swing speed's 104 miles an hour? Or does the swing speed have anything to do with it at all? He understands that with higher swing speeds, they don't have this problem with different brands of drivers. Are there some brands that may be more sensitive to this issue than others? It's a lot of questions, but you get the gist of it.
I do. And his swing speed, you said, was 106?
104.
Well, I mean, it's not, which is a high swing speed, but it's not, you know, compared to what's out there. I mean, I'm not bragging on myself. Mine's 116, and I've never cracked the face of a driver. So, I mean, with technology changes the way they are, you don't see that near as much. He bought his driver back in 04, back then, when titanium was getting more prevalent, and they were stretching the limits the max that they could. They were making the faces as thin as possible to get some type of spring-like effect, and they did have a problem with certain drivers cracking at the face, whether it was at the sole or in the middle or at the top. You don't see that as much anymore. It's unfortunate that it's happened to him 4 times. Obviously, something's amiss there. You know, I don't know what the simple answer is, other than the manufacturers that we deal with. That doesn't typically seem to be a return problem for us. Not the KZG. They make a wonderful product. They're a great golf company. But you don't see it near as much. I think he needs to start looking at, you know, one of the newer manufacturers or one of the other manufacturers out there with some of the newer technology that's involved.
All right. And, Garrett, if you want, you can email Kenny directly.
Yeah, he can.
And you know, Kenny has your email address because I have forwarded this question. So if you guys want to start the communication, he can help you find what you need. All right. This one comes from Tim Flegel of Fargo, North Dakota. Eh? How do I decide?
Oh, come on.
I love that movie. How do I decide what bounce I need on my wedges? My handicap's 7.9, and I lose most of my strokes around the green. Tim, you're not the only one. My driver distance is about 270 plus, and I'm also 6'4" and was fit for my irons. And when I was told at that time that they need to be a plus 3/4 inch, should my wedges be lengthened the same amount?
Absolutely. I mean, you don't stand a lot different on wedges than you do with your irons that you typically play. Referring to bounce, what you need to take into consideration is something we've always talked about before, is what type of terrain do you play on? Do you play on soft fairways? Are they hard fairways? Are your bunkers a real compact, hard dirt, or are they a soft sand like we play down here in Florida?
Kenny, you know, he said he's in Fargo, North. He plays on the ice.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to answer the question more broadly.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I know where he's at. You know, if you have too much bounce and it's real hard, obviously the club is going to bounce quite a bit, and it would cause him to hit the ball thin. You know, he might want to look at, you know, a wedge that has a little bit less bounce. And what that means, it's going to have a little bit more, a little bit sharper leading edge. You know, it's not going to be off the ground as much. So the chance of it bouncing and hitting thin are going to be a little bit less with that type of wedge. You know, let's isolate the problem. Is it because you're hitting into the ground and the club's bouncing into the golf ball, or are you just hitting it fat, you know, where you're actually taking too much of a divot or too much sand out of a bunker? If that's the case, you need to add bounce. It's that simple as far as bounce goes. Is the club bouncing because it's too hard, the terrain, or are you digging in too much? You know, if you're digging in too much, obviously add bounce. If it is bouncing, take a little bit of the bounce out and get something with less bounce. That's where typically, I mean, his handicap's 7.9. I mean, he's a very good player, and typically that's what you find. You know, that type of player's keeping the ball in play, and they're going to lose strokes around the green. And, you know, we always talk about that's the one thing that's free to practice at the golf course typically is around, you know, putting and chipping. You can do that just about at any golf course, and there's no charge for that. So practice, 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 and get the bounce correct.
There you go. Last question for today comes from William Stanton, who's writing from Hermitage, Tennessee. And this is a man who's thinking ahead. I like this. My wife is interested in learning to play golf. I would like to get her a set of clubs for Christmas. Oh, What do I need to look for in a set for beginner clubs for her?
That is so sweet.
Isn't it?
investment-wise is what I would say, because we have sets starting at $299 up to $800 for what I call box sets. What you get with that is you typically get a 3-4 hybrid 5-through sand wedge irons, putter, driver, 3-wood and 5-wood, and a bag, and you get all of that. We have Founders Club is one that we have for $350, which is a very popular brand. Power Built Dynasty package sets, those start around $250. We have the Prince lady sets that start around $400. The Julie Inkster by Tiger Shark, all very popular sets that we sell for the beginning lady golfer. This way, you don't have a huge investment. You're trying to find out, A, if she's going to like playing, and B, her skill level doesn't require her to get into something that's going to be extremely expensive. And you get everything. The only thing you have to go buy then is golf balls, gloves, and shoes, and she's ready to go play. And they're extremely popular, especially around the holidays, birthdays, things like that are extremely popular for women.
And I know my wife got the Prince set with the bag, and she really likes it. And she's not playing that much. I mean, and 9 holes is her limit if she makes it through 9. But I pulled the driver out of the bag. It's like she doesn't need to hit that. That's too hard to hit.
For a lot of women, it can be. And the distance gained in some instances between the 3-wood and the driver and a beginner is not that great, and the playability factor comes into play. She's going to keep the 3-wood in play more than she is the driver. So very good point. Keep that in mind. It could be vice versa for some. They might hit the driver better because they feel more comfortable because it's a bigger golf club, but the fact that the 3-wood has a shorter shaft and a little bit higher loft, they typically are going to keep the ball in play more. But you always have the driver there that you can throw back in the bag when she starts to get a little bit better.
Absolutely.
But from a cost standpoint, you can get into something very, very nice for under $500.
There you go. That's a great
gift,
too.
We stock all of these. So.
That's a
bullet point.
Yeah. And, William, you can contact Kenny again, and he'll walk you through this, too, if that's what you want to do. All right. Speaking of putters. God, my segues are good, huh? We are giving one away, a Frankly Frog. What is it, an F-16, the new one?
That is correct.
Nice putter. And again, thanks to Frank Thomas and the group over at Frankly Frog for allowing us to give this one away. We received 286 entries, and I sorted them randomly this time. And you get to pick a number between 1 and 286, so whatever name pops up in the list.
Yeah, I'm glad you separated them randomly.
Yeah.
You've been bombarded with how you do this, and I've been land blasted for picking not the right number. So,
well, if I have 286 entries and we're giving away one item, 285 people are going to be pissed that we didn't pick them. So
that's one way to look at it. The guy that we pick is going to be happy.
Yeah, and who's that going to be? Hopefully it's a woman.
Since it's random and I never typically go high, I'm going to go 280.
Wow. Okay. Number 280 is from Wilmar, Minnesota, and it is Mike Stenison.
Congratulations, Mike.
Congratulations. You have just won yourself a Frankly Frog putter, and unless you have spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars on a Scotty Cameron putter, I have a feeling you're going to put this in your hands, take a couple putts, and keep it in your bag for quite a while. It's a great putter. Congratulations, Mike. Now, the next group of people are going to want to win something, Kenny, and we would like to give something.
Go ahead and ask me. What else are we giving away?
So, Kenny, what else are we going to give? Can we give something else away now that we've completed that giveaway?
Yeah. I wanted to do something a little bit different this time. Give away a lot of product and stuff, but
yep.
We do have a lot of new apparel item that's coming out, in the fall. And Cutter and Buck's one of the new brands that we're carrying this year. Obviously, it's a higher-end apparel company.
It's a very nice line of
very, clothing. Very, yeah. I tell you what, our guys were extremely excited to see it come in because they started buying it.
You always know when you're playing in somebody's golf tournament and they're giving away, first of all, if they're giving something away that you can wear, it's like, wow. But if it says Cutter and Buck on it, it's like, they're giving away ping clubs. It just feels like they've really taken it to the limit here.
You're right. So let's do this. Let's let's give away apparel item that we have in stock. You can go to our website, and if you know, obviously, if you get our catalog, whatever's in the catalog, and we have it in stock. But a pair of pants and a top of a shirt of your choice. Right now it's probably going to be long sleeve. We do have a couple of short sleeve shirts in there you can choose from as well. But a pair of pants and an apparel shirt top of your choice. I think that's a pretty good gig. I would like to win that, I'll be honest with you.
Well, sorry, Kenny, it's random, so I really can't tell you if you're going to win
and
or not.
I can't register.
Well, you could, but I'm not going to pick your name. But enter to win the Cutter and Buck pants and shirt of your choice, anything from the Edwin Watts Golf Inventory. Go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once you're there, fill out your shipping information and the verification code, then click submit. The deadline for entry is going to be noon, November 5th, and we'll announce the winner on the program of November 6th. And remember, as a Golf Smarter listener, you receive 10% off of any purchase, and you get free shipping for your order, although some restrictions apply. To get the discount and free shipping, again, while you're at the GolfSmarterPodcast.com website, click on the Edwin Watts Golf banner at the top of the page, and it'll give you full instructions how to receive your discount and free shipping. Kenny, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week, bud.
Thanks, Brett. It's been a pleasure.
And remember, you can always see what our new giveaway is going to be and who the winners of previous drawings are on the contest page of GolfSmarterPodcast.com. Thanks again to Lynn Marriott. Her new book is The Game Before the Game, The Perfect 30-Minute Practice. You can find out more about their highly effective program at vision54.com. Now, I have a strange favor to ask of you. At least it feels strange to me. We've been doing the Golf Smarter podcast for almost 2 years now, and in that time, I've communicated with my new golf buddies from all over the world. And on a regular basis, I receive flattering emails commenting on the content of our show and how much you enjoy the perspective of hearing a regular golfer doing interviews with golf professionals. Many of your emails have suggested that Golf Smarter would be a great asset to the Golf Channel. Well, friends, it's time to mobilize. If you think that I should be on the Golf Channel, you've got to let them know about it, because as much of a self-promoter as I've been accused of being, I'm not going to touch this one. So go to golfchannel.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on Contact Us. There's a text box there that allows you to write exactly what you want to see and hear. Wouldn't it be outrageous if something happened with this? It would blow my mind. But anyway, if the Rockies can make it to the World Series, there's no reason why Golf Smarter can't be on the Golf Channel. We close this week's show with another quote submitted by Brad Doerr. Not sure who said this one, but it cracked me up anyway. Thanks, Brad. And it goes like this. The only reason the golf instructor tells you to keep your head down is so you can't see him laughing. If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at GolfSmarterPodcast.com.
Here's another radio baseball card.
If you ask me who the greatest baseball player in history of baseball was, I'd say Babe Ruth. I feel like I've been cheated as a baseball player not being able to see Babe Ruth play the game of baseball. I would have loved to play against Babe Ruth, but if I did, I'd probably be dead now, so maybe I shouldn't say that.
That was Pete Rose, the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball history, and this is your invitation to subscribe to Radio Baseball Cards, hosted by the late Hall of Famer and network announcer Don Drysdale. Radio Baseball Cards is a series of amazing and sometimes amusing stories recorded in 1987 featuring some of the greatest players of the 20th century. Here's rookie Barry Bonds.
Sometimes I'm a boxer out on the baseball field, you know, and sometimes Eddie Murphy, or some days I'm a Clint Eastwood, you know, just really mad.
My first World Series, I was just a young kid in Chicago, and we played probably the greatest team of all time, the 1932 Yankees.
Also, this being the 60th anniversary of the breaking down of baseball's color barrier, we speak to teammates, opponents, and admirers sharing their favorite memories and celebration of Jackie Robinson. Hall of Fame catcher, the late Roy Campanella.
I can't speak for Jackie, but God knows I know he felt this way. It was a challenge to prove that blacks could play on the field and be gentlemen off of the field.
Collect a piece of baseball history that sounds as fresh today as it did 20 years ago. Subscribe to the premium edition podcast of Radio Baseball Cards. at iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.